Good morning, I'm Paul, founder of the New P&L Institute and host of the New P&L, Principles and Leadership in Business podcast. Thank you once again for joining us on our latest episode of the New P&L. Just before we start the New P&L interview today, just a quick reminder of the new leadership programs, our transactional to transformational leadership program, and our new mindset and momentum micro workshops, all of which are focused on helping leaders and employees to build the skill sets needed for the future of business. And you can find links to both the Transactional to Transformational Leadership Program and the Mindset and Momentum Micro Workshops in the notes that accompany this podcast. Or just go to principlesandleadership.com and check them out. And get in touch if you'd like to discuss how these programs can work for you and your business. This week's guest is Carolyn Dawson, Chief Executive of Founders Forum Group, a global community and group of businesses supporting entrepreneurs at every stage of their journey. Founders Forum events are designed to empower today's entrepreneurs to drive positive change through technology, while fostering collaboration amongst some of the world's most inspiring founders, investors, corporate and government leaders. So Carolyn, a very warm welcome to the New P&L. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
No, thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Perhaps if we start with you giving listeners just an overview of the Founders Forum, what it does and who it does it for.
Yeah, so we're a global community. We're at the epicenter of technology innovation, really, where ideas are shared, supported and brought to life. In addition to the global network of entrepreneurs that we have, as well as sort of corporates and venture capitalists, you know, really important part of the ecosystem that we bring all those groups together. We've built a family of businesses at the forefront of digital to serve those entrepreneurs. We say really we're there to support them on those journeys at every stage of their journey to really accelerate their growth. And we do that across a kind of series of services from legal to recruitment to talent, education, and skills that those entrepreneurs need as they scale their businesses.
The landscape for founders and entrepreneurs has changed dramatically over the last 20 years. And given the developments, particularly in AI over the last 6 months, it's about to have another dramatic transformation, I would imagine, over the next couple of years. What are the leadership characteristics that, in your view, that now define the modern founder and the entrepreneur? How do they differ from a decade or two ago, or do they differ at all in your view?
I think there are still fundamental characteristics which don't shift away from any entrepreneur, really. I think the aspect of ability to take risks, that ambitious energy and the kind of resilience and nonstop kind of go-get aspect of an entrepreneur hasn't changed. But I do think leadership has had a fundamental shift. And now, I think to be a successful leader in today's world, there needs to be far more sort of emotional intelligence applied, flexibility used. It's not so much directing an administration today. It really needs to be more around setting the vision and inspiration for other team members to follow. So a real aspect of sort of guiding and inspiring is far more critical.
You mentioned emotional intelligence, air flexibility, that setting that vision and inspiration. That requires a great deal of self-awareness on behalf of a leader to recognize where they need to have that emotional intelligence, what empathy looks like, what authenticity looks like. Do you see in the conversations you have and the people you're dealing with, do you see that elevated sense of self-awareness now? I know leaders are not always the best at perhaps putting themselves in everyone's position within that organization. Do you see them doing that work on the self-awareness side to enable them to develop that emotional intelligence with more tenacity, if you like?
I think since the pandemic particularly, and this sort of greater awareness around mental wellness and work, that has also applied to leaders themselves and actually what leaders require in that sense of support. So it's just become far much more of an open topic that people are willing to discuss, willing to engage in, see as more part of the leadership journey than even 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. So that openness and that shift since the pandemic, I think, has brought the conversation just right to the fore, which means you can't ignore it. You can choose whether it's your style or not to adopt it. But I do think that that has been a shift, and it's just more open. There's more availability to that course component in the leadership journeys these days.
Yeah. We saw some incredible innovation and creativity that came out of the pandemic, out of COVID. You know, we had the shutters figuratively and literally going down on businesses in the UK and around the world. And it prompted an enormous amount of creative thinking about how to get product back into the hands of customers. I wonder whether you feel that level of creativity and innovation has dissipated somewhat. Now we've come back to a kind of business as usual. Or do you see in the conversations you're having and the people you're speaking to that actually that creativity that was harnessed then has now been used to underpin the forward projection of businesses?
I think there's a lot of creativity going on in the tech world right now. We have some really exciting aspects of the industry growth in AI and the developments there at a pace that I think we haven't seen for years.
Yes.
But it's not the only one. We've got developments now in climate tech solutions, in biotech and longevity, in deep tech, so covering sort of AI and quantum. Those areas are really exciting, and the creativity that is coming out of those is really set to be very strong in the UK for the next few years.
We're speaking to a global audience, but we're obviously speaking from the UK. I wondered what your feeling was in terms of just expanding on what you've just said. Where are the key highlights, or what areas hold the most potential for entrepreneurial growth in the UK over the next 5 years?
I think it is in those sectors that I've referred to.
Yes.
So climate is front and centre, and there are so many developments going on there, not only on a software but also hardware perspective. AI and quantum, I think the UK has really set itself out to be world leaders in science and technology. And we've seen that through sort of new development, new department, even within government, that's been set out to do that. And how do we do more to bridge science and technology? There's no doubt those are strong sectors, and also biotech.
Mm.
So focusing on perhaps the new medtech solutions and what are sort of, you know, how can we give people stronger, better quality of life, but also doing more predictive technologies in the medical space?
I guess part of the answer to those evolving and indeed speeding up in terms of evolution and growth is to ensure that there are diverse inputs into that innovation that represent the needs of society out there, and funding for female-led startups and those launched by Black or Asian entrepreneurs in the UK still remains very low as an overall percentage of investment. I wondered where you see areas of progress in this regard, and what areas do you believe remain stubbornly resistant to change, and why?
I suppose in a similar vein to what I was saying around the mental wellness topic, there are and there have been really, really positive, significant strides over the last sort of 10, 15 years in the sense of more awareness, more events, more platforms. That definitely has been there for quite a while on gender imbalance. That now is starting to kind of come through in ethnicity. But we still sort of, to really fundamental drive further change, we need to see more change at the top. So for the entrepreneur's perspective, there still needs to be more people of colour and more female investors at a senior level in those venture capitalists, those making the decisions for the funding. We are seeing more female entrepreneurs, more people of colour coming into entrepreneurship, which is fantastic. But bottom line, with decision makers, that's where we still need to see a shift. And the same in the sense of leadership in corporate roles and senior decision making to continue to move that needle. I think that also it's still the shift in narrative, actually. So what we've seen recently is with a few sort of female senior leadership changes in the technology sector, but also in, you know, Jacinda Ardern in Prime Minister, it's the story and the angle that the press want to latch onto, which is they couldn't have it all, they didn't want to have it all. That doesn't help to set us back. And I think post-pandemic, we can't lose what we've achieved, and we need to sort of double down on that focus to change at the very top.
Very true. You've touched on AI a couple of times, particularly in regard to the developments in the UK. And it's been talked about for much of the last decade as a potential game changer for both businesses and entrepreneurs. But in the last 6 months, with the unveiling of ChatGPT and other solutions, DALL-E and so on, we've been flooded with AI tools and predictions ranging from, at one end, the end of humanity as we know it, to the other end, a truly transformational era for technology, business, and society. So what is the temperature amongst your members on this and the Founders Forum? What is the general feeling about what has developed over the last 6 months from an AI perspective?
I think what never ceases to surprise me is how we can still be surprised in the technology sector. So how we can still be following all these trends and track it, and suddenly, boom, ChatGPT will come out and be very explosive. AI has been, we've been talking about it for years, but all of a sudden, the level of investment, the level of developments in this area specifically, and the pace at which it is changing, and sort of day by day, there's really new kind of stories coming through, new developments coming through. I was even reading this morning now, there's visualization tools using ChatGPT, and not just sort of in the written word. I think that the industry, again, tends to be leaning towards, or the news or the press tends to be leaning towards the threat than the opportunity to jobs.
Yeah.
I think the sector itself has been very excited and very energized in what has perhaps been, no doubt there's been a sort of downturn in the sense where we're at economically, but this is exciting. And it's really energizing in terms of what the sector's thinking to itself. However, I think probably there has been a wave of change just very recently when you have voices such as Elon Musk and Jeff Hinton sending alarm bells. There is a sort of recognition of, okay, actually, do we need to be looking more at the responsibility of this growth and the pace of the change? And actually, I think the focus needs to be, how do we use AI with humans? So how do we actually amplify the human role with AI as opposed to the replacing?
Yes.
I think the real shock has been that these technologies have been seen to be used in the context of low cognitive or repetitive work, which, more susceptible to automation. And that's probably where we thought we'd see the gear change. I think the surprise has been actually how deployable these technologies are to really highly creative, high value work, which we should really look at in the sense that just should enable us to be more efficient, not replacing. So what are the opportunities from this as opposed to the threat?
One article I read recently on the development of ChatGPT and various others is the issue around trust in business and society, and that it may fundamentally change the way we look at something. So we look at something on LinkedIn, and usually we take those things, for argument's sake, at face value. And then we may look to question it at a later date. What AI may put us in a position of is at the first point is questioning, is one of distrust. Is this image real? Is this content real? And that's quite a fundamental transition in the way we approach, both psychologically and commercially, the way we approach our relationships in business, the way we have our conversations, the way we develop as a society. Is that part of the conversation that you are hearing within the Founders Forum about the real fundamental change in the way we are going to have to approach business and society with generative AI?
Yes, I think actually even since the developments of Ukraine, there's been one kind of consistent topic coming through, which is misinformation and truth and trust. There's no doubt that I think that's probably one of the greatest concerns across the sector. And I don't think there's been an answer really truly put forward for this yet.
Yeah.
And so the focus around perhaps where regulation should come forward and where the kind of governments and other groups across the world need to adapt and think about is that sort of the truth question. Yeah.
Purpose is a concept that in business carries with it a lot of cynicism and criticism. Despite the fact it's clearly central to a business's vision and its strategic direction, it's become, I guess, in some quarters a byword for fluff, for directionless navel-gazing, unfortunately. And it's something we work very hard at the New P&L Institute to counter that perception. Why do you think it struggles so much as a concept to resonate with so many leaders in business?
To me, it really comes down to the style of leadership.
Yeah.
And if we refer to the sort of question earlier, those really who believe leadership is about vision and inspiration, and therefore are more likely to align to the importance of setting a purpose, to those that are still in the camp of direction and administration as a tool for leadership. I think that one of the common mistakes now really is that leadership aren't recognizing that we're bridging two very different generations, or perhaps the first multi-generational workforce of our time.
Yes.
And so now really leaders are working across Gen X, Gen Z, millennials, all who have very different outlooks on that aspect. I think there's just more choice around work these days. The next generation want to work to live, not live to work. That's a sort of common phrase, but they need to find a deeper personal connection to what they're doing. And leadership has the responsibility of outlining that. And they'll get more productivity and focus from their teams if they don't ignore it. It isn't just about making people happy and the, I suppose, the woke trend, but it's actually, how do we get work done by driving the best results out of people by actually understanding what makes them tick?
Yes.
And bottom line, if you ignore that and are not kind of focused around how you create productive, highly energized, engaged teams, then you're not going to have engaged customers. And ultimately, that's not going to help drive your business. So I don't understand personally why it's a struggle, but I think they really do need to sort of recognize that purpose is not just, it's not fluff.
Yeah. You started that answer with talking about multi-generational workforce, and it's something we talk about and look at a lot at the New P&L Institute as well, and that inability, I think, within some businesses to tap into that intergenerational knowledge tap, if you like. You know, there are three or four generations sitting within a business that quite often don't really speak to each other, and everyone has an equal contribution to make to that conversation within a business. Do you see best practice out there within the Founders Forum, those you're speaking to, in terms of what great intergenerational knowledge conversations and taps look like? How do we bring all of those people together when quite often there are quite disparate views and opinions within those generations?
I think we have to bring them together. I think we have to do that through whether it's more formal mentorship programs or actually just recognizing that it takes more work and effort to bring groups together and more respect and understanding. And again, that's a role that sort of leadership play in perhaps how they plan strategy sessions or how they plan their sort of creativity and groups within their organization. And everyone will be different. But actually, it would be wrong to think that you should only hire from one generation. This is an amazing opportunity to have those different perspectives, to have those different voices at the table, and blending experience with newer perspectives, new ways of working.
Part of that is bringing together a coherent and collaborative culture that sits with a common set of values and vision, as you've touched on earlier. And I wondered, in this hybrid world of work, whether the thin veneer of sort of the desire to bring people back into work is just a thin veneer to reestablish control, or are there legitimate issues in your perspective from a cultural angle to bring people in, to have those incidental and accidental conversations, to read the room, to understand the body language, much of which we don't get in that sort of hybrid work environment?
Yes, and I think there's no one size fits all. There are certain organizations that can work and adapt perfectly fine to sort of hybrid working or remote working. And there are also certain functions in an organization that can adapt to that very well as well. But bottom line, you can't replace human cues on video.
Yeah.
The nature of the sort of video and Zoom and the other tools are that it's pretty transactional in nature. It's a lot harder to coordinate tasks and teamwork remotely. The social connections that happen. You know, we talked about multi-generational workforces, but the mentorship that can happen for the next generation of employees coming in, often women, often minorities, who actually just end up missing out further by not gaining that mentorship. It played an important part in my career in the early Yes. stages to have those mentors to be able to go to have those role models to look up to, but to see them in action, to actually understand how that would work. in client-facing environments, in the workforce, in team meetings. Those are really important developments that you get early on that you just can't replace in a virtual environment. And I think also the other misnomer is that people are assuming that leaders are trying to get people to come back into the office or trying to get together to be more productive. Mm-hmm. But actually, for me, it comes down to creativity. When you get many voices together, working together to solve problems in a real-time environment, when you're together, when you can understand each other's cues, when you can see what's going on in the room, I think you end up to more creative teams. Yeah. And creative teams lead to better organizations. And so for me, it's creativity over productivity. It isn't this sort of veneer of get back into work to, yes, to just be seen. But I also think leaders can play a role in being clear how you manage hybrid and, yeah, and just actually making decisions around we're either going to do all the meetings online or we're going to do it in person and not try and have too much of a mixed environment as well, which sort of creates more confusion and doesn't help.
Yeah. I know you're very excited about the possibility for technology development in the UK and the technology investment and entrepreneurial landscape. So I wanted to ask you a question on unicorns, on technology unicorns. I know Brett Hoberman, who established the Founders Forum, recently wrote an article for The Times celebrating the UK's success in building unicorn tech businesses. There's clearly a lot to celebrate, but I wondered if sometimes the focus on getting to unicorn status and the drive to get there changes the dynamic of the startup, i.e. it starts with a clear purpose for innovation and transformation, but then it ends up being almost forgotten in the commercial race for that mythical status of unicorn valuation, the £1 billion or dollar valuation. Is that balance between innovation, purposeful innovation, and the desire to get to unicorn status sometimes lost? Is the focus too much on commercial and not enough on innovation at some point in that process?
I think there's definitely sort of something around this unicorn status that's a little bit masking actually potentially what the reality around this is, which is, yeah, what's essential to understand for any entrepreneur is really the best possible outcome isn't necessarily always that sort of IPO. It's getting a wonderful, well-timed, clean, high valuation exit that returns not only obviously for you, but for the investors. So how you get to that end game really is laser sharp focus on building a really strong, viable company, yeah, that will attract investors, that will position you for that solid exit. And that's really what the investors are looking for as well. So the kind of aspect of just trying to find something around the name of a unicorn can be distracting actually to what is really growing a solid fundamental business.
Yeah. A big part of what you do with the Founders Forum is bringing those innovators and those investors together. And I wondered what the investment landscape currently looks like for UK businesses post-Brexit. What do startups and entrepreneurs, I guess, need to just consider now that they didn't have to prior to that exit?
For sure, it's the trade. So yeah, the access to European markets is just perhaps a lot more bureaucratic, a lot slower. So factoring that into the growth trajectory of your businesses, so clearly to get more addressable consumers and to get more growth, you need those access to those markets. And talent is another sort of significant one. And we actually do a lot of support through the TechNation organization that we brought in to bring and to grow more immigration visas to enable people to grow their teams with the right skill sets that they need, the right digital skills, which there's no doubt we sort of need from foreign markets. But it's hard to tell, actually, yes, with the impact of COVID. But we do need to work harder, I think, with the EU post-Brexit for sure, to reduce that sort of red tape to getting access to markets and improving the trading connections that there are across Europe, because it's a critical market for us.
So the UK government recently announced it'll be joining the Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership, the CPTPP, not the greatest acronym. And I know you were in Singapore recently for the Founders Forum Asia event, and I'm sure this topic came up in conversation. So I'd love to get your view on what you understand this agreement will deliver to UK entrepreneurs in the Asia Pacific region.
Yes, I think it's a really exciting market. I mean, Asia's experiencing high growth, high consumer demand. So actually for founders and for fast-paced sort of businesses, those high growth consumer markets are really exciting and compelling, but it's complex because it is, you know, people look to Asia and think it's one geography, one easy area to penetrate. But the reality is all the countries have very different regulations, very different access to markets. And so actually this sort of trade agreement helping to reduce those barriers will really help the UK companies grow across Asia. And that's an exciting, that's very, very exciting kind of opening of doors, I think, which will enable faster growth. But it also encourages investment into the companies. And there are many, many family offices growing in Singapore. It's a really fast changing market. So actually enabling the attractiveness to those investors into the UK market is, you know, in these economic times is really compelling. So I think it's a wonderful agreement for those reasons.
So you celebrate your 20th anniversary as an organization in 2025. You're nearly there. How has your purpose and your ambitions transformed over the last 18 years? What are the ambitions for the next decade?
So I suppose our principal purpose has actually largely remained unchanged. So this was founded by Brent Hoberman, as he said, 20 years ago, really after his journey through lastminute.com and wanting to enable the next generation of entrepreneurs to build their peer-to-peer networks that was lacking in that environment so many years ago, and actually to accelerate their growth. And so how could they do that? Through better connections, not only with each other, but also with the investor landscape and with corporates, that could help partner, the corporates could help mentor, and could grow. And that's, you know, specifically in the technology sector. That still remains unchanged today. Actually, what's sort of happened in that time is there is now a beautiful flywheel that those founders that have grown up with us in the last 20 years and been very, very successful in their industries. There's one thing about the technology sector that there's a real ethos of giving back. And so those founders now that have sort of exited and been very successful have either gone on to create next companies, or actually there's a real sense of giving back to help the next generation. And we bring that together in Founders Forum. And that's, you know, that's been a fundamental part to our purpose. And it's really just around connecting entrepreneurs to help them and support them on their journeys. For us, where does that go next is that we've built those networks very successfully across Europe and America. And now it's looking at international growth. So looking at the high growth markets like Asia, looking at Middle East, which is really looking to transform its entrepreneur landscape. So how can we do more in international markets to help connect them as well into the UK and the US, but also looking at how we can do more to support earlier stage companies? How can we help more of those companies come through the pipeline, as it were, but to scale? So we need more scaling growth in the UK. And so how can we do more in that in a tangible way to support entrepreneurs through the connections, but also through education and access to data and insights and intelligence?
Do you think there is enough done at a secondary school, particularly secondary school level, to, I guess, to encourage entrepreneurship, but encourage it in a practical and a realistic way? You know, we have a social media culture where perhaps some of the struggles of the entrepreneur aren't reflected so much as the standing next to the Ferrari or whatever it happens to be. And it creates, certainly in my mind, and I've been a lifelong entrepreneur, creates quite a false impression of the reality of the time and the effort and the sacrifice it takes. And I wondered whether there's enough done at secondary school level to inspire, but to also set a practical understanding of what the entrepreneurial journey is.
I don't think there is. I think it's not... our curriculum is very set to sort of traditional topics. And even, you know, I would say looking at how it's taught and how sort of methodology is put across and actually who is teaching it. I think we could do an awful lot more around building business, building life skills into the curriculum and how those are shared and communicated in different formats would be a lot more compelling across the sort of education ecosystem now. even, you know, so the focus has been on bringing more STEM for schools, but that's sort of translated into coding courses. But now, even with sort of the developments of ChatGPT, will that be irrelevant in 5 years' time? But there are still fundamentals around teaching maths in a different way, and actually just the fundamental basics of business and entrepreneurship as well. We could be a lot more robust in improving our education system with that, and which would translate for any sort of moving towards into business as well.
Is there a role for business in that regard to have more of a direct relationship with educational establishments, or do you think that it still needs to run, at least in terms of the way it's organized traditionally, from government into education?
No, I think business should definitely play a deeper role. We need more role models. They need to sort of see, as you sort of said, in that sense of actually understanding it's not just the Ferraris, but what does it take? And having more role models that aren't just rolled out with the traditional two or three that we see in the press all the time is really fundamental. And so business definitely has a greater role to play, I think, to be more practical.
This is obviously the new P&L podcast, Principles and Leadership in Business. So I wanted to ask you, what does ethical and principled leadership look like when you're an entrepreneur that's founding the business? You know, from your perspective, the conversations you have, how does a founder weave into the fabric of their business from the very outset and an ethical and a principled approach to leadership into their business?
I think integrity is critical. Setting the tone and being the example. I sort of have a bit of a mantra of do what you would expect of others. Walk, I suppose. But that the communication and honesty is critical. So creating the values, but upholding them as well. So even along the journey, not deviating from those, even if that causes painful decisions along the way, I think is critical.
Carolyn, we always end the show with our guests offering listeners one or two final pieces of wisdom that they can take away, and potentially practical pieces of wisdom that they can take away and deliver in their business tomorrow. What would they be from your perspective? What would you like to leave our listeners with?
For me, one that I probably hold consistently is ditching perfectionism, which is hard because I'm a perfectionist, but actually making a decision today rather than Friday.
Yes.
And moving at pace, I think, especially in today's world, is critical. And actually, that probably touches on my second one, which is in the pandemic, we moved with such pace and almost just really transformed the way people were doing business. And now, as we sort of get back to more normality, well, we're already in normality, what I think is a shame is to lose that.
Yes.
So what were the influences then? Obviously, fairly obvious, but actually, why return back to BAU? Why not focus on holding some of the speed at which we moved and made decisions?
Great advice to end the podcast on. Carolyn, thank you so much for your time on the new P&L. Been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you. If you'd like to learn more about the Founders Forum, go to ff.co, ff.co, and you'll also find the links in the notes that accompany the podcast. If you've enjoyed this conversation with Carolyn or any of the other episodes of the new P&L, I invite you to rate us or review us. It all helps with our ratings and our rankings. So finally, I'm Paul, host of the new P&L. Thank you once again for listening, and have a great day.